Oh, we're live.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the Today-ish podcast. I am your host, James Lee.
And I am Danny. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's so exciting. We're finally live.
We're live. It's going. Do people see it? I think so. I think people are seeing it. All right. So we got a great show. We're covering a lot of stuff today. What are we doing? What are we talking about?
Well, we're going to be getting into peace in the Middle East, first and foremost, going into all of that. And then, look, I know everybody's distracted with what's going on over there, and as they should be, it's a very hot topic, but we still have a lot of questions when it comes to Charlie Kirk's public execution, assassination, whatever you call it. You have found some really crazy information with internet searches before Charlie's death. I've found some more very suspect characters in the crowd that we're going to do a mini deep dive on. So that's what we've got going on today.
Absolutely. Let's get into it. Okay, so peace in the Middle East, that is in quotations.
Well, so big news, because obviously the war between Israel and Hamas has been going on for over 2 years, and it has been catastrophic. And as of a couple days ago, President Trump is getting a lot of credit for this, for brokering a ceasefire between Hamas and Israel and implementing a 20-piece Gaza peace plan. So he went over to Israel. They announced this. He was greeted in Tel Aviv with, you know, visuals of the, you know, profile of his face. Thank you, President Trump, in the sand. Flew over to Egypt for a peace conference, Peace 2025, where he signed the Declaration of Peace for peace in the Middle East. And he signed it. Egypt signed it, Turkey signed it, and Qatar signed it.
I feel like we're missing a couple of critical parties in that signature
list.
That's
a little concerning. Israel and Hamas did not sign it. So
look, how does that work?
All of the hostages, this is the good news, is that all of the hostages were returned. And that is amazing, right? Because they're brothers, sisters, moms, dads, and they're innocent people that were part of a game of war, and they're returned to their families.
Well, so Israel is actually saying that not all of the hostages have been returned.
Well, so the deal is that all hostages, living and dead, must be returned. All of the living hostages have been returned to Israel.
Yeah.
But there is rumors or speculation that Hamas is purposely stalling returning the dead bodies to Israel because they do not want to go into phase two of the peace plan, which would be Hamas giving up their arms and integrating a technocratic state over Hamas, over
so
Gaza.
I think that's actually maybe a little bit of like a PR Hasbara Israeli spin, because I actually think that Israel wants to get out of this deal. They're trying to find some way. So I'm a little bit less optimistic maybe than you about this peace deal. I don't think it's going to really hold. We'll see, because I think they're trying to use the hostage thing as a potential way to get out of the deal and saying Hamas has reneged on the deal, so we're going to resume bombing or resuming a takeover, right? Because I think there's one situation that I read that the bodies are like under rubble, and some of them have even been proven through like forensics testing that it was like an IDF bomb. And so some of these hostages were actually killed by the Israeli Defense Forces.
So I have heard that too, but I listened to Mario Narwal do a live with some experts in Israel and in Gaza. And they said that that is a spin from the other side, that they do have the dead body. So for me, it's one
both
of those
sides
things
are spinning, you're
where I don't know what is actually going on because I'm not there. And I would love to see everlasting peace in the Middle East. However, I'm also skeptical for many reasons over this deal. And, you know, what really concerns me is that you have President Trump coming out and saying that he's going to give time for Hamas to release all of the dead bodies, the hostages that have died, to Israel. But, you know, after a reasonable amount of time, he's saying that we will disarm you to move into phase two. And so actually we have a clip of that C2 if we want to play Trump saying that.
Told them we want to disarm. And they will disarm. And if they don't disarm, we will disarm them. And it'll happen quickly and perhaps violently. But they will disarm. Do you understand me?
Yes.
Because you always, everyone says, oh, well, they won't disarm. They will disarm. And I spoke to Hamas. And I said, you're going to disarm, right? Yes, sir, we're going to disarm. That's what they told me. They will disarm or we will disarm them. Got it? Okay.
What is the deadline you're going to put on that? You say quickly, sir. Sir, you said quickly, but what is the deadline you're going to put on that?
A reasonable period of time. Pretty quickly. A reasonable period of time.
I feel like we got to define that, right? We should define what a reasonable amount of time is. And I don't, I mean, Trump is hilarious. Like, even in that exchange, he's just like, they're going to do it. They're going to disarm. It's not going to be a problem.
Yeah, for me, that's not the concerning part. The timeline is not the concerning part.
Really?
For
because
me.
I think it is concerning because they're going to use it as a pretense to say, oh, they didn't disarm quickly enough. Now we got to go back in.
Yeah, my concern is that it has been bad enough for the United States to be funding this war in the Middle East. It has been bad enough that the United States is using tax dollars to give to Israel to bomb Gaza. Okay, that is bad enough. Now, this might even be worse, right? What does he mean by we will violently disarm them? Is that the United States now sending troops in if they don't disarm? So for me, I am an America first person, voter, right? I wanted to stop giving money to the Middle East. That's one of the reasons I voted for Trump. I wanted to stop giving money to Ukraine and Russia. So when he says that, and by the way, he's made so many empty threats. That's like a part of his, you know, gig, is he says these things and 95% of the time nothing happens. So in the case that something were to happen, that concerns me because to me that would put the United States in a worse position with this peace deal than we were already in. But I do think that President Trump has put his name on the line, right? He's in every single news, every single broadcast. He is now the, what are they calling him? The Prince of Peace or the President of Peace.
Yes.
And he did the, peace, you know, president, the whole summit, Peace 2025. He's announced it around the world. It would be so embarrassing for him if this lasted a week or a month. And he is a guy of ego. Everybody knows that. So I think he's going to do whatever it takes to make sure that he gets the peace.
And what does that mean, though? Because
that's a great question.
We've already seen Israel violate the ceasefire, not just past ceasefires, but this current ceasefire. I think we do have an element for that. I think it's D2, which shows just in the first couple of days, and this is already out of date. I've seen more numbers coming in today, but just in the first 4 days of the ceasefire, we have, what, this is like 62 Palestinians killed in the first 4 days of a ceasefire. So one could argue, what exactly is a ceasefire? And also the other thing, too, that people should know is that Israel has been, I don't know if you know that, I think you probably do, that Israel has been paying like Gazan militias to carry out mercenary work in Gaza. So it's no longer the IDF, necessarily their forces doing the bombing or doing the shooting. Now they've basically contracted local militia that are, I guess, not Hamas, but other Palestinians and Gazans to fight on the behalf of the Israeli military. So there was one prominent journalist who was killed a few days ago. And the story there is that he was caught in some kind of exchange between this Israeli backed militia and Hamas.
I think it's in Israel's best interest right now also to get peace. This could have been a huge PR move, right? Israel, the United States support for Israel was on a steep decline after the Charlie Kirk assassination. Whether or not Israel had anything to do with that doesn't really matter, right? Because the internet was talking and everyone was saying, why was Benjamin Netanyahu the first person to respond about Charlie Kirk, you know, before President Trump? And there was all these, you know, you can call them conspiracy theories, whatever they are. But either way, the Charlie Kirk assassination put Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel under a microscope like never before. Then they did the whole meeting with all the influencers. They started paying them $7,000. Even if somebody...
Where's our $7,000? Can we...
Well, know why you don't have $7,000. but no. And so there was this, you know, effort to change their PR. And I said this on the show, the only thing you need to do is stop the war. And now all of a sudden the war is today stopped. And I do think it's important to give credit where credit's due. I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but I am happy that we are moving, hopefully, towards a peace plan. Am I skeptical about it? Yes. Do I think that possibly this might be a WEF agenda and a test site for Agenda 2030? Yes, I do. And we can get into that in a second. But I have to also recognize, like, the hostages were returned and other countries are supporting peace. And hopefully that will put pressure on the two sides to follow through.
And I think the interesting thing to point out, the hostages, and I think it's important to point this out, is that I think Hamas had maybe tens of hostages that they released back to Israel. Some of them are alive, some of them were dead. But Israel released, what did they call, like 2,500? So where do these guys come from? Nobody was talking about those hostages that Israel at some point captured. Some reports saying years and decades ago that they were just put in some prison.
Yeah, for whatever reason.
And nobody was up in arms about those hostages, but just the sheer number difference, right? I get all lives are important.
Yeah, and the hostages that they're referring to on the Hamas side were captured from October 7th.
From October 7th.
So that's specific.
Specific, but Israel had been capturing Palestinians for years and decades, and nobody really gave a shit about that.
Yeah, and so I think right now the deal is for every one dead body returned to Israel, they're releasing 18. So that's the ratio where once all the dead bodies are returned, all of the Palestinian hostages will also be released. So there is a plan for everybody, 18. So whatever that number equates to.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But what's the plan? So who's going to run Gaza? That's a big question, right? Because they're saying it's not going to be Israel. It's not going to be Hamas.
So now, then phase two is to usher in a
technical... ISIS? Is it going to be like another terrorist group? Because is that the U.S. always, they go into these places like Syria and Libya, and then they topple the dictator who's there or whatever regime, and then they install their own guy. But what happens is the guy that we install is oftentimes a former terrorist. Now they declassified that group and they're in now.
Yeah.
And that's basically, we're okay with terrorism sometimes as long as there are our guys.
Well, the person that's proposed to be on the board, I would say, is like a form of a terrorist. So because I am not down with the WEF, the World Economic Forum.
Oh, Klaus.
Klaus Schwab, the way that you have been kind of putting a microscope on Israel over the last year or two, I've been doing that about the WEF since COVID. So for the last 5 years, I've read all of their, journals and their newspaper reports, and I've noticed the different world leaders that are tied to the WEF. And so for those of you that don't know, the WEF is called the World Economic Forum, and it was started by this guy, Klaus Schwab, and it is a global elite organization. And you have world leaders that are affiliated with them around the world. Justin Trudeau is one of them. Javier Milei is one of them. Bibi Netanyahu is one of them. And literally all over the world. And they're the ones behind the "you will own nothing and be happy," the Agenda 2030, where they want a technocratic state. They want a one world government. They want digital IDs. They want a cashless society, right? They basically want to control you. They want a surveillance state. And so for phase two of Gaza is to make it a technocratic governance in the interim period of time. Now, will that be an interim solution or will that be everlasting? I don't know. But I was looking into it, and right now Donald Trump would be the head of the peace board. They did say no terrorists, nobody affiliated with Hamas is allowed on this. And they've proposed this guy, Tony Blair. So Tony Blair is the former prime minister of UK. But now he is and has been for the last decade a huge member and supporter of the World Economic Forum. And it's interesting because when you look at the UK and what's been going on there lately with requiring workers to have digital IDs, that is a WEF agenda. Obviously, that's under a different prime minister, but UK also seems to be a test site. And actually, I don't know if you caught this week, they've now changed it from just workers to, we think, individuals in the UK as young as 13 now should have digital IDs to go to school. So they started with the workers. It's already starting to happen. They want everybody to be in their system. And so I just find it very odd whether you look at Maui, what happened in Lahaina, whether you look at what happened in the Palisades in Malibu, two fires destroyed a city, or what you see what's happened in Gaza, a city completely destroyed because of war. Every time there is a smart city plan that was already in the works that follows exactly what the WEF wanted. And so my fear is that Gaza is going to be a test site. They call it a smart city because they can't call it a concentration camp. And they're going to usher in the WEF 2030 agenda and see how it goes before they administer it to the rest of the world.
Well, they say every war is a banker's war. Clearly, now that after the most of the military is now withdrawn, now the bankers are entering in. They're going to try to divide the land up. How are we going to profit off of this, basically, right? Are we going to put the casinos in here or the high rises, condominiums, resorts, and all those kinds of things? And I guess my concern is part of the peace plan, and to the credit of the peace plan, is that the Palestinians have a right to return to their previous homes. So how are they going to make that happen if they want to build all these resorts? And, you know.
Well, so my question would be, you know, do you want to return even if they rebuild, if you're going to be surveilled and have digital IDs, cashless society?
Well, they've already been surveilled. I mean, they were basically in a prison. They were in an open air prison. So this can't be
any worse. So this would be a better option.
One could say that it would be better, right? Because before they were being treated like cattle and, you know, they were being basically.
I mean, even worse.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, even before October 7th,
I mean, cattle in Italy are played, you know, symphony music and given baths and, you know.
Before that, because there was some kind of Palestinian worker program where they went to Israel and they had to pass through all these checkpoints, right? It looked like they were at a zoo. You know what I mean? Have you been to the zoo when they have these animals and the gates?
No, I don't go to the zoo.
Well, the zoo is very, the zoo makes me sad and happy at the same time. This is an aside, but because I enjoy animals, but I feel like they're in captivity, which by definition they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's sad.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm an anti-zooer. But you know,
I mean, I'm in between. I enjoy it, but it's
my dogs ride shoddy. You know what I mean? So it's like me and the dogs, like right there. So yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens, how quickly they build, who they do end up putting on this peace board, right?
Yeah.
If Tony Blair, because Tony Blair is just proposed, but as soon as I heard that name, I go, yikes. I don't know if you remember in June, I did a story on how these Abraham Alliance billboards were popping up in DC and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this company, AbrahamShield.org, and it was this nonprofit political organization. Not nonprofit, non-government organization. And they proposed a 20-point Gaza peace plan. And one of the heads of this company was this woman, Miss David, and she actually worked for Tony Blair. And so I had done that connection back in June where I was like, oh my gosh, are they going to usher in a WEF state? And remember, these billboards were popping up. It was Donald Trump in the middle and then like all of the Middle East leaders. And they're like, peace in the Middle East, a new world order for the Middle East. And I was like, whoa.
I know, it's crazy that the WEF still meets, you know, every year in Davos.
Yeah.
And they just openly talk about this stuff like nobody's listening. But I think part of, I guess a lot of them actually feel like it's good. They're saying, what's the problem here, guys?
Right. What's the problem of making your dog eat crickets and telling you you need, you're going to get carbon credits every year.
Right. A couple episodes ago, didn't you talk about there was at a WEF conference or something where the doctor was talking about making people allergic to meat as a way to solve climate change or whatever?
So, yes, I did. There was a guy in 2016 who spoke about how there's this tick called the Lone Star tick. And if it bites you, you happen to become allergic to red meat and dairy. And how great it would be if we just like let them loose and forced people into the climate change agenda so that they don't eat meat or drink dairy but because they can't.
He's not saying like, oh, we're going to do this. He's saying that as if it's going to be ushering some grand future, utopian future where we're living amongst the animals in a perfect
environment or whatever. Well, yeah, they always present these things to you, right? Like a smart city.
Right. They're saying, what's wrong with a smart city?
Right. It's smart. It's like
unless
so smart.
You say something that is against what they want you to say, and all of a sudden that smart city will attack you back.
You're right. There's no cash. So, you know, you have a social credit score at that point tied to your bank, and, you know, you use too many carbon credits that month, so you're not allowed to buy any beef, you know? So yeah, it is very concerning. And speaking of the carbon credits, this is really crazy, but there is this idea from the WEF that you would have carbon credits, meaning like you're allowed a certain amount of carbon output every day. Mm-hmm. And in the UK, of all places, of course, somebody posted a picture of this. They have like wrapped to-go sandwiches. I don't know if you've seen this. And on the corner, it says 8% carbon.
8% of what?
Like as if it was a part of the nutritional value, like of your daily allowed limit.
Oh, if you buy one sandwich, that's 8%. Boom.
Now you're down to 92. What
would Bill Gates be at through one flight? He'd be like a negative 7,000.
Well, you know, like we talked about this with Jimmy Dore last week, right? Yeah. It's like he has carbon credits. So.
Yes.
Just like.
Just like Epstein had rape credits.
Yeah, exactly. That was the joke.
I do think that this is probably what they're going to do or try to do in Gaza, and the Palestinians have no choice because they have to accept it, or else what? They go back to the way they were before. So this is like the perfect group of people to take advantage of because they have no rights at all. So they're like, hey, you either take this.
Right. It'd be harder to implement this in Maui or the Palisades, right?
Right. Because this is still a little bit a free country, right? I think we still have this feeling that we're in a sort of land of liberty. That this facade is still there.
Yes, and like if there's anything I want to fight for, it's my loud voice, as you know. So, you know, I think that, and I've stayed true to this, even if people say things that I don't agree with or they're mean or whatever, I still want them to have the right to say that. I never want to restrict anybody's speech. And so freedom of speech to me is really important. But I just have to bring this up before we switch to any other topics. Mm. If we can bring up element 2E, to me, this is the funniest part of the whole entire peace deal. So President Trump is being praised, right? This is what he wants. He wants to be the president of peace. And Time magazine puts him on the cover called His Triumph, right? Trump doesn't get like a lot of like positive Time magazine covers.
Yeah.
And he fucking hates this cover. He tweeted out, Time magazine wrote a relatively good story about me, but the picture may be the worst of all time. They disappeared my hair and then had something floating on top of my head that looked like a floating crown, but an extremely small one. Really weird. I never like taking pictures from underneath angles, but this is a super bad picture and deserved to be called out. What are they doing and why?
And so somebody here is saying, where is the bullet wound?
Yes, I know, on the ear.
Well, so, okay, just putting it out there, nobody looks flattering from that angle.
No, nobody does. But
do you think Time magazine did that on purpose to make him look bad as like, yes, we're going to write a good article about you because you did do the Gaza peace deal. Nobody else was able to do it. Biden wasn't able to do it. Obama wasn't able to do it. So we have to write this good article about you, but we're going to shade you in some kind of way.
I mean, look, when there's people that have like compared past president Time magazine covers and they're glowing, right? It's like putting a filter on a picture. No, I'm just kidding. No, me and James, right before we started this
the
live,
look at the
James
thumbnail.
Was doing the thumbnail and I'm like, why am I not filtered in this thumbnail? Yeah. So basically, Obama, glowing Time magazine covers, Biden and Harris, amazing pictures, Clinton, Bush. And then obviously like this is just not,
this is
good.
In the moment. This is like some photographer was underneath him, right? The press pool, they're underneath and they're taking a picture up. He's like doing some speech
get older, you know, they're.
Dude, I mean the neck, come on, that's unavoidable.
The neck, but also the hair, right? Like, we all know there's a comb over going on, right? Like
I thought he had legitimate hair though. He showed.
It's legitimate hair, but you have to comb it over at the right angle so that it looks good, you know? And it makes me like think about my grandpa when I was growing up, we would always do family vacations and stuff, but he never wanted to go to Hawaii. And I would be like, why? And my mom would say, oh, because it's bad for his hair. He didn't want like a gust of trade winds to come and like fuck up his comb over, you know? So anyways, you gotta just laugh at the fact that
he's not happy about this.
He's on his way to the Nobel Peace Prize like he wants as of right now. And he's bitching about this cover, which I just think is so Trump and like hilarious. So,
which by the way, I'm good with him getting the Nobel Peace Prize. And this is going to be sort of controversial to say, but I don't think the Peace Prize really means diddly squat, you know? Like Obama got it and he dropped, what, more drone bombs than any other president preceding him. So I don't think that it really means anything. If he wants it, give it to him. I don't care. I mean, it was started by a guy who'd invented dynamite, so I'm not really even sure how meaningful.
Wait, the Nobel Peace Prize was given to the guy that invented dynamite?
It was invented by the founder invented dynamite. Oh, Nobel.
Wow. Wow, I did not know that history. Yeah. How interesting.
So I don't know if it's that meaningful. If he wants it, give it to him. If it's going to encourage him to bring about peace, do it.
Right, like before we came in here, he had a call with Putin. Now he's trying to end the war between Russia and Ukraine. Look, at the end of the day, I have to be skeptical of everything because there's been a lot of weird stuff going on with the, you know, Israel-Hamas war and everything else. I want it to be good, and I am very happy today that we've made progress in ceasefire in this deal. Obviously, phase one is not done. We'll see how that goes. But look, if he ends the war in Russia and Ukraine too, great. But for me, I'm like, okay, if there's a ceasefire and the war is ended, does that mean we're going to stop giving money to Israel? Does that mean we're going to stop giving money to Ukraine? That's, as an American that wants like our roads fixed, our schools improved, all of that, that's what I'm curious about. If that happens, I'm going to be like in the street with my freaking MAGA hat.
Well, there's two parts of this. One is whether or not this peace deal will hold. I'm very not that optimistic about it because I think Israel will find some way to blame Hamas and saying they violated in some way, they are hiding a hostage or they did this and that, and to renege on the deal and then to do whatever it is that they want to do. That's one side of the concern. And the other side is a lot of the activists, the Palestinian activists I've heard are bringing this up, is that, sure, you may have now negotiated a ceasefire, but what comes next in terms of the relationship between the U.S. and Israel? What happens to the Palestinians? And this is why I think AIPAC is still very, very relevant in American politics. It's not like, oh, we're done with Israel now, right? Ceasefire, it's over. No, we still have military arrangements with them. We have to give them $3 billion a year at a minimum, right? We give them a lot more right now because of the war. So all of those things are still important. I think that's something to take note of, and which is why I think AIPAC has now rolled out a new ad trying to convince us that they are as American as apple pie. So that is element C5.
American as apple pie.
AIPAC.
Let's talk about AIPAC.
Today, AIPAC.
On Capitol Hill, AIPAC.
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 You may have heard our name, but how much do you really know about AIPAC? AIPAC is an American organization that works to strengthen the U.S.-Israel relationship. This partnership advances America's interests and democratic values and helps keep Israel safe. Our 5 million members are U.S. citizens, Democrats and Republicans from every part of the country who urge our elected leaders to enact pro-Israel policies. This includes expanding America's defense partnership with Israel, supporting life-saving security assistance, confronting Iran and its terror proxies, and promoting peace and normalization. Being pro-Israel is good policy.
Also, why do they use
AI? And AIPAC members make sure it's good politics, too. We raise money to help elect pro-Israel candidates for Congress from both parties. And we take the political fight to our opponents, helping defeat anti-Israel candidates running for the House or Senate. AIPAC is leading the fight in Washington to secure the future of the U.S.-Israel relationship. The actions of pro-Israel Americans today will help determine the future of this bond and the fate of both countries.
Why do they use like Google AI video generator? And also, I didn't hear anything about how why that's important to America. By the way, they said it's super American. I didn't hear anything that we get out of it as Americans.
So, and you know more about this than I do. So I'm going to ask you, and if you know the answer, you can just tell me. But isn't it true that almost all of our politicians have accepted AIPAC money except for like Thomas Massey and...
Yeah, there's only there's like 90 to 95%.
And who else? MTG or...
MTG, I think previously Matt Gaetz. I'm trying to think on the Democrat side, AOC.
Has not accepted
AIPAC AIPAC money, but she has accepted money from other organizations that are less, I think, hostile than AIPAC. They're not as aggressive, but she does play nice because I think she does want to be president one day. Mm. And you do have to...
The real American story, from bartender to president.
What a story there.
What a story.
Or stripper to president. That's even better. Anna Paulina Luna. What if we get one
Seriously?
Of those?
Oh my God, so hilarious.
But okay, so yes, they give money to 90 to 95% of candidates. And also, if you don't take money, they'll just fund the opponent.
Right. And so I think people have, and when I say people, I mean the masses, right? Like normal, everyday Americans have started looking into AIPAC's influence.
Yes.
Obviously, to the point where they had to make a commercial to combat everybody online and just talking about their involvement in our politics. And basically, you don't have the right and the left agreeing on anything unless it comes to an AIPAC issue, right? A lot of the times.
A lot of times. I mean, I think this is the one issue that if you go back a couple years, we would never expect this to be at the forefront of political conversation, but it seems to have broken both parties' brains a little bit in that the Democrats, they don't know what to do. We're going to play a clip from Gavin Newsom in a second, him reacting to a question about AIPAC, and then also the Republicans don't know what to do either because there's fracturing on both sides as it comes to the issue. Because you could see by that commercial, there's nothing that they advocate for that is American. Their whole thing is advocating for the interests of another country, right? They're talking about
right.
How do we get America to support Israeli policies or
right.
Policies supported by Israel? There's nothing in here that's like, oh, we're going to...
And isn't a big issue that they are not registered as a foreign agent? Isn't that like the big thing?
That is the big thing. That is the big thing, which I'm going to get into. Maybe I should get into it right now, right?
Yeah, explain it to me.
So typically, if you're lobbying on behalf of a foreign country, you have to register under what they call FARA, the Foreign Agents Registration Act. Okay, so every other country has to do this, including Qatar. A lot of people are throwing Qatar out there. Qatar has to register. So if Qatar is giving money... especially from a political perspective, they have to register. So what that means when you register is that all press materials, which includes press releases, social media posts, ads, things like that, they have to say distributed on behalf of a foreign principal. Okay, mm-hmm. So that's important, right? And they're also prohibited from directly donating to U.S. Political campaigns. So you can't just give money directly to candidates. It has to be done through like a proxy. So that's what Qatar does. So, I mean, I'm not going to say that Qatar doesn't do any influencing. It's the fact of the matter is in America, you can influence anybody if you have money. So they'll find other, you know, nonprofits to give money to, and then they'll spread their messages in that way. But you can't directly coordinate with candidates like they're doing right now with AIPAC and various congressional candidates and senators and
so AIPAC's president. Basically able to like cut out the middleman and just give directly to candidates. That's one of the benefits.
Yes, that's one of the benefits.
Okay.
And also you don't get labeled as a foreign agent, right? Because under every press release, if you had to say this is on behalf of a foreign agent, that looks really bad.
So it's kind of like as a content creator, if you take an ad, right?
Yeah.
You have to say like hashtag ad.
Yeah.
But it's like AIPAC doesn't have to say that.
AIPAC does not have to say that, no.
Right? They don't have to do hashtag foreign agent.
No, they don't have to do hashtag foreign agent. And then also there's a lot of disclosures that they have to do. Like every quarter or twice a year, something like that, they have to disclose all of these finances, where they're coming from. Are they coming directly from various Israeli ministries or whatever? Now it's just like kind of a black box. Like whoever wants to give money to AIPAC, they can give money to AIPAC. They say they're American citizens. We don't know for sure. There's probably some, I mean, there's cases of people tracing money that goes from some nonprofit to Israel and then back through some channel. It's like similar to how we're giving money to them right now, and then they're giving money back to our influencers, right? To
$7,000.
Yeah, and $7,000. And the history of this is actually quite interesting, which I'm going to get into. I have my notes here because there's a lot going on. So back in the 60s, the U.S. actually wanted and was very close to making AIPAC register as a foreign agent. So this happened under Attorney General Robert Kennedy, who was under JFK.
I was going to say, wasn't this supposed to happen and then they offed JFK?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to say that directly, but there were a series of, I guess, policies that they wanted to implement, communications to what they called. So this is back in, let's see here, 1960s. Yes, it was called the American Zionist Council. So they wanted them to register as a foreign agent. So that's the AZC is the predecessor to AIPAC.
Oh, wow.
And on November 21st, 1962, Attorney General Kennedy sent a letter to Israel saying the receipt of such funds from the American sections of the Jewish Agency for Israel constitutes the American Zionist Council as an agent of a foreign principal. The council's registration is requested, meaning that they should register. And then in May and August of 1963, a Senate Foreign Relations Committee held hearings that revealed tax-free donations to the United Jewish Appeal, which is a humanitarian fund. This is what I was talking about before. So there's donations given to this humanitarian fund in Israel, but then that money was being channeled back to the U.S. to be used for lobbying and public relations. So this is where the flow of money is kind of sketchy. And then on August 16th of 1963, DOJ analysts wrote a letter to the head of FAR saying the department should insist on immediate registration of the American Zionist Council under the Foreign Agents Registration Act. October 11th, 1963, the DOJ demanded that AZC register and, quote, the department expects a response within 72 hours. And then October 17th, there was a DOJ memorandum that reports that the attorneys for the AZC pleaded to not being required to register as foreign agents. They offer to provide the required financial disclosures, but that registering as a foreign agent would, quote, be so publicized by the American Council on Judaism that it would eventually destroy the Zionist movement. And then November 22nd, 1963, we know what happened there.
JFK was shot.
Yeah, and then Johnson is sworn in that same day. And then shortly after he became president, Johnson reportedly remarked to an Israeli diplomat, quote, you have lost a great friend, but you have found an even better one.
And so then I'm guessing
that was the end of that.
They didn't have to.
That was the end of that.
That was the end.
That was the end of that. That was the same thing that happened to the nuclear.
Charlie Kirk. No, I'm just no.
Please, we finally got the live stream to work. Let's not get taken down right away. But this is what happened to the nuclear deal. The nuclear disclosures, right? Because Israel is like, that's like the biggest known secret is that Israel is a nuclear country, even though they don't have to abide
disclose.
By, they don't have to abide by any of the rules that a nuclear country has. They don't even have to acknowledge that they are a nuclear armed power. They just have it. And so they're just
allegedly,
it's not even allegedly at this point, because we have photos, we have documentation of nuclear facilities in Israel. It's there. They just don't have to follow any of the rules.
Interesting. I thought it was funny. I saw a clip. I don't know if you saw this. I think last week with Matt Gaetz, and he was talking about when he got into politics, he had to go to an AIPAC fundraiser, and they were like, put on this barcode and like talk to all of the, you know, AIPAC people. And if they like you, they're going to scan you like produce at the grocery store and donate to you immediately on the spot. And he was like, it was so weird.
It was weird. I mean, Matt Gaetz is the victim, I would say. I mean, there's obviously he has his sexual proclivities that we can't excuse, but he is a victim of allegedly an Israeli honeypot operation with those girls on the boats in Florida.
I don't know about this.
That's how he was ousted from
his position.
His position.
I didn't know it was a honeypot.
Well, this is alleged. I mean, we can do a deep dive on it. But they're saying that there's a trace of money and relationships that those girls were placed to be potentially in his circle, and he would do some things with them.
They don't want a lot of free thinkers.
No, they want you to be controlled. And the same with Jeffrey Epstein and all the billionaires. They want you to have, they want to have something on you so then they can lord it over you. Say, hey, remember
this? Well, and it with this whole Gaza peace deal, it makes me feel even more that the Clintons are, I mean, we already know that the Clintons are on the list, but it's like Hillary Clinton is coming out on mainstream media and she's like, I need to praise President Trump for this deal and his whole administration.
Yes.
And I'm like, bitch, you don't like President Trump or this peace deal. You're just happy that the Epstein list still isn't out and your life is peaceful.
Right. The Epstein list is still not out, which is unbelievable.
I mean, you know.
Maybe, maybe not.
I think the more, pizza party goers that continue to praise Trump, you can just
You're talking about Chrissy Teigen?
I'm talking about John Legend.
Oh, John Legend. Yeah. Yes.
On behalf of his wife.
I don't know anything about that. That's like your world, to be
we'll
honest with you.
We'll have to do a deep dive on this on when we do another Epstein episode, but for the people out there, you know, you know.
If you know, you know.
They do. Right in the chats. You know what I'm talking about.
But really quick, before we move on from yes. APAC, I just want people to see that this is an issue for politicians. They have to address it at some point. It seems like they're really unable to. Let's play D5 from Gavin Newsom. He basically freezes up. He's a robot, obviously. He's some, you know, sleazy robot person, and now he's unable. He short circuits. Let's take a look.
Yes.
This is D5, which is Gavin Newsom. There you go.
Ugh, I can't even look at him.
Interesting. You're
he's a slime ball.
I hate him.
In years, which is interesting. I will not vote for a candidate that takes $1 from APAC.
It's interesting. I mean, it's interesting. I haven't thought about APAC. And it's interesting. You're like the first to bring up APAC in years, which is interesting. Why did I say that? Not relevant to my day-to-day life.
Okay.
Which is just interesting.
Listen.
It's interesting you say that. JPAC perhaps more, but APAC less and less.
Okay. Fair enough.
Which is just interesting.
What's interesting about it?
That it's just interesting as you bring up APAC that it hasn't been part of, I'm just reflecting quite openly and honestly, hasn't been part of the day-to-day.
Yeah. The only reason why I ask is because with that, what I'm talking about is lobbying in and of itself.
Anyways, it's interesting.
Yes.
It's interesting.
Well, and he's like,
it's interesting.
He does his little
dance.
He's like,
what's interesting about it? The guy's like, what's interesting about this?
And he's like, maybe JPAC. And then I don't know if you saw it last night. It was reported that Governor Gavin Newsom assigned legislation making California the first state in the nation to establish a statewide, quote, anti-Semitism prevention coordination to oversee all K-12 public schools. The measure was driven by the Jewish Public Affairs Committee of California, JPAC, a robust lobbying network often described as the state-level counterpart to APAC.
Okay, see, this is where they're going to just extend their reach to various different groups. It's not going to be called APAC anymore. It's going to be called like the United Democracy Foundation, something like that.
They should have done that. They called it JPAC. You think that's better? Like, are you kidding? You can come up with a more creative name.
Well, I think a lot of this is journalists have to go in and dig through all these disclosures and things like that. So if you keep creating new names, people won't be able to keep up. The media won't be able to keep up because what you have to do right now is like there's aggregators out there saying, hey, how much money are they taking from APAC, right? But then let's say now that goes down, that money is just being funneled through now a different organization, JPAC, maybe something else. And it's a constant like whack-a-mole kind of situation where we can't keep up with where the money is coming from.
Yeah.
The reality is they're getting money from somewhere, obviously. He can't answer that question. He's like,
he doesn't want to answer that question because he's running for president of the United States during the next election as a Democrat. And he doesn't want it on record. He doesn't want anything coming up once the campaign really starts going. We know he's doing that. And everybody that doesn't live in California, if you think Gavin Newsom is like the bee's knees, you're wrong. He's an evil guy. He's bought and paid for. He allows his cities to burn to the ground. He creates these committees like in Laguna Niguel and San Juan Capistrano, where if there's a lithium battery storage facility that's proposed to be there and the city votes no, he created an energy board that's up in Sacramento by non-elected officials that can usurp them, and they can now say, oh, sorry, even though your city voted no, we're going to get community engagement, aka buying off an organization by giving them $1 million to get them to sign a thing, and then they can put a lithium battery storage facility in a high fire zone and basically create Palisades part 2.0. He is not for the people. He's an evil guy. He's best friends with the Getty oil money. He's friends with all the real estate people, right? What he's doing with the low-income housing in Malibu. I mean, he's gross. He's disgusting.
Well, California is not in a good situation because I don't know if you saw the thing with Katie Porter. She's probably going to win.
What? I would die.
Did you see the clip of her when she—
Get out of my shot!
Not even that one. Oh. I did. You know, like, that one is crazy, too, like, to her aide, right? She's like, get out of my shot.
Like, if that's how you treat the people you work with, how are you going to treat me?
But there's another interview that came out with her and some local journalists. And basically, all she was asked was, how do you plan on winning over MAGA voters in California? She's like, well, I don't have to do that. Why do I have to do that? And then just basically threatens to end the interview because of too many follow-up questions. And she's like, freaks out. I wish we had that clip, but she basically freaks out. Jordan's like, these are the same questions I ask all the candidates. And it's not even a hard question. The thing is, it's not even a hard question. It's like, oh, how do you plan on winning MAGA voters over? Easy. My policies are for everyone. I don't care about politics. I care about helping the people of California. Boom. Answer done.
Leave for governor.
Right? And it's like, she's just like, I don't have to win them over. Like, why do I have to win MAGA voters over? I'm going to win the Democratic Party, you know, voters.
Well, probably because Kamala Harris, when she ran for president against Donald Trump, single-handedly turned 32 counties out of 50 in California red.
Okay.
So
she has to win some of these.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Well, because she's like, I'm going to be facing off, because her thing is, I'm going to be facing off with another Democrat in the general election, which happens in California because it's a jungle primary, meaning the top two vote getters in a primary move on to the final or the general election.
And so it's going
to
be Katie Porter and who?
And maybe the other guy who's, I can't remember his name, like Bachera. Anyways, it's probably going to be two Democrats, to be quite honest with you. And she's saying, so I don't have to deal with the Republican.
I wish Rick Caruso went under. He's also a Democrat, by the way. But he's just...
I'm not so sure. I don't know enough about him, but I'm also sketched out by that guy because he's like a weird business dude that I don't fully trust. What? I don't have any like specifics.
You're just calling him weird?
I'm just calling him weird because I think he's not for the people. I think that's my main issue because he basically saved his own mall in the Palisades or whatever.
Well, and the whole like surrounding area.
Did he save the whole area or did just his mall?
I mean, his well, look. When you have nice infrastructure and nice shopping centers, mm-hmm. that is a positive for the community.
True.
It's not his responsibility as a business owner to provide fire trucks to the neighborhoods. That's Karen Bass's responsibility. He ran for mayor. He should have won. Karen Bass was in freaking Africa, you know, doing God knows what. The reservoirs were empty. She cut the fire aid, gave homeless people more money. Despicable, disgusting.
Look, we have to fix, I mean, California is in bad shape. I mean, we talked to Butch Ware. He's obviously not exactly your brand of politics, but I think he said
I like Butch.
He said a lot of stuff that made sense, right? Because the Democratic Party, extremely corrupt because they have nobody holding them accountable for anything that they're doing. And the Republican Party doesn't have a strong foothold here. So they're not able to really check the power. So then we're left with just horrible leaders like Katie Porter. I mean, I think she's probably going to, if I were to put money on, she would probably win, even though
I'm not
she's
betting you against the worst. So don't even try it.
Yeah. She is literally the worst, right?
Me and Jane's episode, yeah. Like one, voted on voted on who is going to win mayor of New York.
And we don't know yet.
Mamdani is going to win. And I bet him a handshake that I would take him out to his restaurant of choice. And now there's billboards saying Mamdani's like 86% up.
Well, you're lucky. I'm a pretty cheap date. I don't have the same taste as you, which is
correct. I also can have like cheap taste. It's like either plant-based. I like, you know, organic and I'm fine. But anyways, so I'm not betting you again. I hope it's not Katie Porter. I would die. But is it too late for anybody else to get in the race?
No. I mean, well, it's never too late. I mean, it's voting is next year, but in terms of political, probably too late. The people.
Caitlyn Jenner.
Yeah, I don't know if Caitlyn Jenner would do well. I don't know. I mean, I think.
How could California not elect the first trans? Truly, it's a great question.
That is a good question because she's a Republican. If she was a Democrat.
Oh, I mean.
That would be a different story, yeah. I guess. I mean, obviously, this is fun conjecture. I hope California elects a good leader so we can. I mean, this state has so many good things going for it.
The beauty of California is unmatched. You know, it is just so beautiful in October for anybody that's overseas or not from California. I think October is the best month. All of the tourists are gone. The beaches. I mean, it's not going to be super warm, but like the sunsets, unbelievable lately. I've been hiking every day, every night.
No, it's great. And that's why I sometimes appreciate Trump's honesty, right? He can just tell it like it is. He's like, yeah, I got these Jewish donors from Israel and they love Israel. So this is what we're going to do. I just love these clips when he just says the quiet part out loud. E5, amazing display of honesty. I think we need this.
I actually asked her once. I said, so Miriam, I know you love Israel. What do you love more, the United States or Israel? She refused to answer. That might mean Israel.
That's what I'm saying. It's like.
But I actually asked. I'm going to get her in trouble with this. But I actually asked someone. So I said, Miriam.
I think that's what he just says. It right. He just said, my donor is she prioritizes Israel, and then Gavin Newsom just has to say, kind of a similar thing. It's like, yeah, I think Israel is a good partner for us. I'm going to continue this relationship. That is at least better than it's interesting. Isn't that interesting? It's so interesting.
Well, that's why people love Trump and have, you know, whether he was on The Apprentice or whatever, because people appreciate honesty, even if it's not what you want to hear. Mm-hmm. We know when it's bullshit, right? Like, no one was praising Trump when he was saying, you know, forget about the Epstein files. Everybody's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, like, we know that's a lie. We know that something's weird there. As humans, we intuitively know, I think, most of the time, the difference between honesty and deception. So speaking of deception, yeah, let's get into Charlie Kirk. It's been, what, 1 month now?
1 month, RIP, Charlie. September 10th.
So over a month.
Over a month, yeah.
And, yeah, it's really sad. It's just really, really sad. Everything that's transpired. This week, Erica Kirk received, on behalf of Charlie, the Medal of Freedom, right?
Yes.
From President Trump.
Absolutely. So let's just play that. That is C7.
Remember Charlie down on the patio? He could sit there all night long listening to this music.
Okay, so I thought we were going to play the clip. I don't know if people saw him, you know, in the ceremony. And Erica is crying, which we haven't seen a lot of. But we also saw his parents for the first time, which a lot of conspiracy theorists and people are like, where is his parents? And it was heart-wrenching. Like, it was so sad because you can tell his parents are just, like, it's so horrible. Their faces and everything. It's so bad. But you have Kash Patel now coming out 2 days ago saying that no conspiracy theories will be followed, whatever, like at all whatsoever. Basically just saying, like, Tyler Robinson's the guy, we're going down this path and that's it. But we want to be on, well, I want to be on Team Candace Owens. I don't want to let this just die and just take the FBI's word for it. I think we still have a lot of questions to be answered.
100%. I think, okay, so to defend Kash Patel, which I'm going to do for a second here, just for fun. His job as the head of the FBI is not to engage in conspiracy theories. His job is to put forth a case for the prosecution to say, this is the evidence that we're going with. So he's actually just doing his job, which is fine.
Okay. Sure.
And it's the job of the-
But were you doing your job when-
Which is different than the Epstein stuff.
You caught the guy and called off the manhunt and then it wasn't the guy? Yeah.
So that's different. So I think that is a whole different bungling of the job. So I think we can say that he's not doing a good job as, like, the actual operator, the functional leader of the FBI versus these public statements that he has to make to say, yes, we are not following these. Because imagine if he indulges in conspiracies. That actually destroys the prosecution's case right away.
Yeah, it's just interesting. You watch him on podcast after podcast when he's running and he is engaging in all of the Epstein file stuff and he's saying, we're going to be the most transparent FBI. And then he gets in and he's like, Epstein has, there's no evidence he was ever with any girls. It's like, are you kidding me? Like,
100%. I'm done with Cash. I mean, I'm done with Cash.
I mean, you concreted over the crime scene. You have not talked to anybody in the crowd. You're just like, nope, we've got it. There's UVU footage. We haven't seen it. We haven't seen the camera footage. I mean, it's
the camera footage from behind is so critical now that if you've been paying attention.
Well, Candace supposedly saw it.
But she didn't see it clearly because she saw it over like a Zoom or a FaceTime or something. She didn't look at it very, very closely.
But she saw it and said there was no blood that came on the other side. And then right after that, immediately after that, the FBI came out and said, Charlie Kirk has a spine of steel and it stopped the bullet. So every time she has said something, and I get it, a lot of people are like, she's crazy, she's throwing out this random stuff, but she is leading this investigation. Totally. Have you seen the meme, I posted it, of Mr. Beam like cheating off of somebody's test? And it's like the FBI, and it says like the FBI, and then it shows the person doing the actual test is like Candace Owens.
Yes, yeah. So let's get into that, because there have been some new developments I think that's important to point out here in regards to the autopsy and the bullet and all this stuff. So Candace Owens, clip D7 here, is getting into who the medical examiner is for the state of Utah.
That's the medical examiner. It is a woman named Dr. Deidre Weiss Amaro. Deidre Weiss Amaro is her name, and she blew in from California. She was announced as the new state medical examiner in May of 2024. From Missouri. I think she also worked at some point in California, and she was announced as the new Utah medical examiner, state Utah medical examiner in May of 2024. So I'm interested in learning as much as I can about this medical examiner. I'd like to know more about this medical examiner.
Okay, so let's pull up really quickly E7, because there were also some other people in another faraway place who was very interested in Deidre Amaro. Let's full screen this so hopefully people can see a little bit better.
James
here.
Lee bringing us a PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, PowerPoint presentation.
Okay, I'm into this.
Let's go to view, go to full screen view. Slideshow. Boom. Okay, perfect. Okay, so if you see in the top left corner, Deidre Amaro, this is from Google searches. Okay. Google Trend Search. Okay, so obviously nobody knows who that is, right? Nobody is really searching for her. No. But if you see here, filtering for the state of Israel, somebody, multiple people, we don't know, there was a spike in searches for Deidre Amaro in late June, early July timeframe. Okay, there's a spike, goes up, boom.
Which is really interesting. Sorry to interrupt, but remember I was talking about those billboards, the Abraham Accords? That was at this exact same time. And Gaza, the peace deal was supposed to be happening. I don't know if that maybe, you know.
Well, I don't know.
Charlie's a part of the plan or whatever. So, I have no idea, but
this is just data. I'm not making any conclusions from this data. This is just data saying, hey, there was a spike in searches in Israel for this name, Deidre Amaro.
Okay.
Right. So they're very interested to see who this medical examiner was in
Utah. Yeah. We know nobody's looking at a medical examiner in Phoenix, Arizona, randomly searching that from Israel. Like, or
I don't know.
You know, Wyoming or whatever.
Unless they had an interest to do so for whatever reason.
Right.
Which is the next. Okay, so if you go to the right here, Timpanogos Regional Hospital. Nobody's ever heard of this hospital other than Charlie Kirk was declared dead at this hospital.
Yeah, okay. Unless you live in the small town.
Right. So then if you see here, in mid-August, there was a spike in Israel. Somebody who was in there was very interested in the Timpanogos Regional Hospital. I don't know. It's just data. It's interesting.
You egg me on with this stuff to be a full conspiracy. You do. You're going to make me.
I don't know. So I don't know exactly what it is, right? It could be somebody over there had like a family member who maybe needed to go to this hospital or something, right? Somebody in Israel could be like, oh, I need to find out more about this hospital. But you can't just spike, like one person is not enough to spike a search. It has to be like a cluster, because I did some research on how this works. And depending on the amount of total searches it takes to do a spike, like in Israel, there's probably not a lot of people. So this could be created by not one person, but like a handful of people could probably cause a spike.
Like five?
Something like that. If it's in an area where there's not a lot of people searching, like in Utah, it would probably be different if people are Googling the Timpanogos Regional Hospital.
Right, because that's in...
In this, you know, it's relevant to their day to day. They're trying to see what hospital's nearby. So then I want to talk about the surgeons, right? We don't know which surgeon, right? There was one surgeon that was cited by Andrew Colvett, the spokesperson for TPUSA,
who said he had the spine of
bones
steel.
Of steel, right?
Yes.
It entered and the bone blocked it. You know, the bullet is still in there. We don't know which surgeon. So people have been looking up, okay, what are the surgeons' names who are there? We don't know which one it is. So I compiled a few of them. So
Andrew did not say who the surgeon was.
No, okay. We don't know who the surgeon was. Candace posted a thing on Twitter saying that she didn't release the names, but she said, I got a couple of names from the hospital. And she did say, these are the two here are potentially on the list that she was given. So this guy named Stephen Nealman, he's an MD. He's just a doctor, surgeon from Timpanogos Regional Hospital, but you can see there July 18th, somebody over there in Israel was searching Stephen Nealman, And then if you look to the right, somebody also was searching Lee Trotter, who's another doctor surgeon at Timpanogos Regional Hospital. And it was around the same time period in mid to late July. People were interested.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So how do you interpret? I don't know if you've seen this stuff
before.
How
do I interpret it? You know the emoji where the brain's blown off the top of the head? Yeah. That's me right now. And I'm just like wondering, when you were doing this, did you change the, like, just to see, like, did you change it to Italy and see if there were searches there? And was it flat?
Okay,
like,
so
yeah.
By the time I got into this, because this is a guy named Baron Coleman, who I did research on. So he's like a radio host, a former radio host from Alabama, and he has his own podcast. So he was doing these searches like a couple of days after the Charlie Kirk shooting.
Okay.
So then when I got onto this and I went over to Google, I didn't put it on here, but it basically says no results. So if
they
They scrubbed it. Because these posts have gone viral on Twitter. Like, people have been posting this all over the place. And
oh my God.
And now it's, you search it and it's not there anymore. There's no results, which is very interesting.
Okay. And scrubbing makes it worse.
We don't know. I'm not going to go and claim they scrubbed it, because I asked Google, do you do that? And they said, no, we would never do that.
Please.
It is very odd.
Sus.
It's very sus. There's a couple other ones. So this is some other search terms, and this is actually out of DC.
Okay.
So you see Tyler James Robinson on September 9th, one day before Charlie Kirk's assassination.
There's that little peak.
There's a little peak right there. Somebody was searching Tyler James Robinson. The bigger peak is when we all found out about it. People are searching it.
Of course.
There's a little peak there beforehand. There's also the Losi Center, a little peak.
What's the Losi Center?
The Losi Center is the building name the rooftop.
Right.
Tyler Robinson was allegedly
taking
the shot from. I don't know why people would be interested in that place beforehand, but
I mean,
they were.
Students. Oh, but this is from DC.
This is from DC. And then there's also, do you remember that private jet that took off? You were telling me about that took off, transponder turned off. They said no big deal because it's a airspace where transponders lose signal or whatever. You see here, September 9th, okay, somebody was searching that tail number, N888KG, on September 9th. And then you see the spike after. That's when people, you know, were going crazy when it was going viral later.
Yeah.
And then the last one I have.
Is that the Egyptian plane?
That's not the Egyptian plane. This is the other
different.
One.
That's
this
the is a different one. That's the other one.
And then Mauser 98. Nobody searching anything for it other than August. Little spike on August 27th. So obviously these
are Mauser 98?
Mauser 98 is the gun, the rifle that Robinson allegedly used.
And here's what we still need to know, right? Yeah. We need to know the bullet that was stopped by Charlie Kirk's neck of steel.
Right. You might want to talk to Stephen Neelman or Lee Trotter. One of these guys may know that information. We don't know.
Because that is a very important piece to the puzzle. Because obviously it would have to come from the rifle. If it's the, what is it called? The 30-06.
30-06.
30-06. And just, you know, for people that haven't been following along, here's a regular bullet, a little bit. It's like this big. It's a elephant tranquilizer. Mm-hmm. This bullet. No, that's actually, it's a big game rifle. It's used, right? You said it shot through two pine trees or something?
Well, yeah. It shot through, the video that I saw shot through a, I don't know how long, 18 inches of this gel, this that they test ballistics with, went through that and then two planks of wood.
So anyways, the point is that,
shoot through elk.
Yeah, it's...
So there's something sketchy there. I mean, I don't know if we can fully trust it. I think the autopsy and these things will come out at some point, probably.
Maybe.
And they'll say, like, this was it. Because I actually looked through in the past the big profile, high profile assassinations, right? And Martin Luther King Jr. was allegedly assassinated with a similar 30-06 caliber rifle. We don't know anything about it because they actually never matched the ballistics to the gun.
They
never matched. They just convicted a guy who the head of the FBI at the time, J. Edgar Hoover, said that he was a very hateful person and therefore committed this crime. And they just jailed him, but never matched the ballistics. I think at that time, there probably wasn't this kind of press coverage.
Well, everybody didn't have a smartphone for one.
Right. And then there were eyewitnesses on scene that said, hey, they saw somebody in the bushes across the street, which was from a different direction than where they said this dude was, that the official shooter or whatever. They said it was another bush over there. And the
for
next
MLK
day,
Jr.
Yeah, yeah. And then they said the next day, the Memphis Public Works came by, cut that bush down.
So just so like concreting over Charlie Kirk's.
A similar situation where why would the, you know, within a couple days, why would they need to even concrete over the area and also the behind areas? Like, are they trying to change something? Also the planter boxes. Now I think Candace is basically saying, hey, the shot could be coming over from the planter boxes over there. And those are now moved as well. Ian Carroll sent me a video the other day. He's like, hey, I'm here. Planter boxes being moved.
It's insane. It's just crazy. And there's, it's not just them remodeling, right? It's crazy that they just decided to remodel over time. But we brought up the deleted podcast episode
right.
from George Zinn and from Stokes and Folks. And, you know, he's a very suspect character. He's been involved in politics
yeah.
with this low paying job over and over. But now you have these other characters too, because we really want to look at everybody.
We have 5 minutes left. So which one do you want to get into? You want to get into Hunter Kozak?
I think we can get into both quickly, but, Hunter Kozak, sure.
I think Hunter Kozak for sure.
Kozak is the individual that was asking Charlie Kirk the question.
Yeah.
And what's so weird is that somebody caught him doing what looks like a practice reaction, Charlie Kirk getting shot right before. So if we could play D8, that would be amazing. Okay, so here he is. This is before Charlie Kirk's assassinated. Look at him. Why would you randomly be doing that? And then look, this is where Charlie Kirk gets shot. And same reaction. Same reaction. So let's this guy is on TikTok, right? He does what we do. He does like news or political commentary. He has a small, much smaller following, I think like 40,000. And he's addressed this. And people have pulled up a lot of stuff. They said, oh, you're a theater kid. And he said, I'm a part of the plan because I'm, you know, I'm this, I'm that. And he's like trying to dispel it. But he says, he addresses this specific thing and he says, oh, I'm just very theatrical and my friend told me something right before.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but you do the exact same movement right before. It's like a little crazy. So that's one person. And is it okay if we go like 5 minutes over? Okay, so I think that's really weird. And then we have this other guy, David. This is C8. And we all have seen this guy, the curly hair, the shots are fired at Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk is shot. Everybody's ducking down. George Zinn stands up. He's saying, it's me. It's me. And then you have this other guy with curly hair who's celebrating, right? This guy. We've all seen him. And it's like, who the fuck is this guy?
Well, we found out. I think we know who that guy is, right?
So this is what's really crazy. So, New York Post found out who he was on September 12th. They wrote this article, mystery bearded man who appeared to cheer shooting of Charlie Kirk claims he chanted USA to create distraction. Mm. The mystery bearded man who appeared to be celebrating in the crowd moments after Charlie Kirk was shot claimed he wasn't cheering the horrifying violence, but shouting USA to create a distraction that might help save lives. Does he look like he's doing that there? I don't see USA.
Well, who told him? Did anybody tell him to do that? That's the question.
There's no time to, unless he was a part of it, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's the thing about George Zinn, right? Because he's saying, allegedly,
right.
that somebody paid him to do that distraction. He didn't do it on his own accord.
Interesting. So he goes on in this article and he says, this is David's words. And by the way, in this article, they only call him David, but I did some deep digging and his name is David James Sparg or Sparke or something like that. When I heard a sharp crack at first, I thought it might have been fireworks or a disruptive prank. And then he goes on to say, I looked up to the horizon for smoke. When none appeared, I realized it must have been a firearm. And he said, based on a friend's reaction, he believed Charlie had been gravely injured and instinctively checked the security team's movement before rising to his plate. He claimed that he was only minimally familiar with Kirk's content, but said he would never wish to celebrate to harm anyone. And basically, he was just doing it to help save lives. nobody does this to help save lives. I've never seen anybody save a life by pumping their fists like they're a part of a Jersey Shore cast since 2008. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, we don't know. My feeling is that some of these guys in the crowd, it's really hard to say if they were a part of the operation or not a part of the operation, they're just reacting. Because that guy may have been saying that to save his ass. Like, I'm sure there are people, I mean, we 100% know that there are people who were celebrating Charlie Kirk's death, right? So he could have been one of those people. And then now when he's being interviewed, he didn't want to sound like that. So he just made up some bullshit story to say, oh no, somebody else, you know, I was doing this for another reason.
What's really weird to me, and we don't have that much time, so we're going to have to just carry this over into our next episode. But what's really weird to me is the kid that was asking the question and this David guy both made statements on TikTok and social media where they filmed themselves like addressing all of the rumors. And this guy, David's, we'll have to play it next week or we'll post it on our page. You can see his eyes moving like he's reading a script, and it's very, very weird. And the same thing goes with the other kid. And so you just have to wonder with these people, like, were they all in on it? Because nobody believes the lone shooter theory. And as we start to pick out these people that had abnormal behavior in the immediate aftermath of the public execution, you have to start, is this like, you, what do they call it, a flash mob when everybody starts coming and dancing, you're at a public place. It's almost like that, almost feels like that.
Well, I think we have to look, in terms of figuring this stuff out, outside of the FBI's help, is that we have to look for what people call, like in the crime investigative field, called like fact patterns. We have to figure out, okay, what's fact, what's not fact, and then we have to piece it together. For example, the Google searches, I think that's just data points. That's like a fact that somebody was searching it. I don't know if it's related or not. And then you look for more facts to then build a case to say whether or not this was a lone shooter or was it some massive grand conspiracy to take out Charlie Kirk, right? So we have to look for more pieces of evidence to say, okay, so that we got that Google search. It's weird. Conceivably, yes, somebody in Israel or DC could have been searching those terms and it could have caused those spikes. But then let's say we have another thing to say, okay, George Zinn. If we could figure out who paid him, then that's another fact, like another data point to say, okay, now these two things we can substantiate as fact. And then we have, let's say, the bullet. All of these things then piece together to either support the official story, or at this point, I think there's more evidence that supports that Tyler Robinson was probably not the guy, or at the very least, he was a part of a bigger operation, not just some lone gunman who hated Charlie Kirk.
100% a bigger operation. And when you look at the odds of these things, right, like the George Zinn thing, what are the odds that he's involved in these terrorist events time and time again? What are the odds that he bypasses security at Reagan's funeral, that he, you know, gets into the, you know, the Seahawks tunnel? He does all of these crazy things. He knows all of these university presidents. What are the odds of this? What are the odds that you have multiple people that are, you know, cheering and creating distractions? This guy says, I was creating a distraction to save lives. Or were you creating a distraction for another reason? So now it's like, oh, well, you're on record of saying the truth, but it's not really the truth you're presenting, right? He said, I was creating a distraction to save lives. Maybe that's the story you were told by whoever paid you. But the reality is like, yeah, you were creating a distraction and you're an odd man out. You look like you're at Coachella.
Yeah.
And you're at a public execution. It's weird.
So we're going to definitely stay on this case. I know it's been over a month. I think some people are like, hey man, I think it's probably Tyler. I get this all the time when I post about this stuff, where they're just like, what are you guys doing? You know, I'm like, well, I'm trying to figure out what the hell happened here. Cause obviously, you know, what, you want to trust Cash Patel? Like, that's always my rebuttal. It's like, okay, yeah, sure. Go with the FBI. Go with the FBI story.
Well, it's not just like, you know, we're not just like on some regular, you know, Law and Order crime episode where just somebody was killed. Charlie Kirk was silenced. Charlie Kirk was spearheading a young Republican movement. He had the groundwork. He was starting to question Israel. He was a huge voice in conservative politics. He was an open Christian, and he was killed. And so this isn't just some guy that we're digging into. It's 100%. A very important thing that we get the correct answers, not just for Charlie, right? It's for you. It's for me. It's for every single American. We need to make sure that this is not the beginning, the tip of the iceberg that starts to erode our freedom of speech, which we're already seeing happen in UK and other places in the world. So it's really important that while we still have the ability to question the narrative, that we're doing our best possible to uncover what really went down here.
Well, he's our generation's JFK, right? That's why we brought in the story, or I was talking about the story with AIPAC and FARA registration, and you could see what happened in the immediate aftermath after his death and how things changed really quickly, right? Before, he was doing some things to press on Israel, and all of a sudden he's gone and those things disappeared. Now, we're in a similar situation with the Gaza peace agreement, right? And I think this could have huge implications for how geopolitics develops over there, right? Not only over there, but across the entire world, there's going to be huge shockwaves sent depending on what we choose to do. And without his voice being there, it certainly changes the course. So that's why it's really important to figure out exactly who did this.
100%. We have 2 minutes left. So I just want to see
if we have any questions.
If anybody has any questions, I'm on the chat reading.
I'm trying to see.
How do I go? So let's see.
Let's see. Where is
I have never drank a green drink. What's in the cup? My favorite question from Siren. This is matcha. And I just would like to give a shout out. This is not paid. High Tide in Laguna Niguel, my neighborhood coffee shop. I don't drink coffee, but I drink matcha. They're the best. Shout out to Hillary and Sierra. They make me the best drink. They're awesome. Okay. Let's see who else, see if we have,
somebody asked about, is Candace's hat a PSYOP joke? No, Candace's hat, I know what they're talking about. She's wearing a hat that looks like the CIA emblem, and it's actually her own merch. It says Candace Intelligence Agency.
Yeah. And I think it was, Laura Loomer who came out and said that Candace was going to get sued by the CIA for a federal crime.
For a parody?
Shut up.
It's like, what are you talking about? God. Have they never seen like the FBI female body inspector shirts? Like those shirts have existed for ages.
Candace is like, there's CIA Halloween costumes for sale on Amazon. Are you going to go sue Jeff Bezos?
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy. Let's see what else we have. Do you all think Charlie's security was in on it?
It's possible. We can't write that off. We don't really know.
I grew up playing softball, and I said this on many episodes. I think it's weird that we're getting third base coach signals from one of the security guards. Everybody else see that? He's like,
no, I know who you're talking about.
He's the hat. He's swiping across. He's doing the earlobe. Like, you know, you look for those, you know, signals when you're on first base, like, am I stealing? Am I stealing? Like, that does seem like there was possibly someone giving the green.
Right. That's the thing with the,
to fire
yeah, we
the
didn't
shot.
Show, we didn't have time to show this video. Another guy in the crowd, like, turned his lanyard over. It was, I mean, there's weird things like that in the crowd that should be looked at, but we can't say for sure what that is. It could just be normal people doing interesting things, right?
Look, it's not like he's doing the Macarena.
I know, but then the guy, then I'm all good with that. But then sometimes when you look into these guys, it's okay, so now you're talking about his security detail. There's another guy that I looked into who is a photojournalist. I'm like, okay, would these guys be involved? So there is a lot of noise out there. So I think once we get like a very distinct fact and we pin that in, it's like, okay, this happened. And then all the other stuff is we look into it. And if it's something that we put it into our, you know, our imaginary board, actually probably should have a real board of,
I would love it,
of all this stuff. But I think that's what we do, is we keep going with this and we see what happens, because I think this is, once we say, like we said, this is instrumental in the future of, you know,
freedom,
United States, freedom, everything.
And transparency. Like, we have to hold Kash Patel accountable to his own promises at this point. You said you're going to have the most transparent agency ever? Yeah, you are, because we're going to freaking do your job.
Yeah.
Inch high private eye right here.
And so to support our work, please head on over to Patreon, sign up, support the show so we can keep it independent. We don't want to take on any investors, anybody who could compromise the editorial freedom of this show. We will not do that. So we want it to be user-funded. We want to be listener-funded so we can keep saying exactly how we feel.
Right. We want to be free.
Free and poor, like
there's
you said.
Free and poor. There's that, the mattress guy. Did you ever see those commercials in California? And he'd go, your mattress is free. Anyways.
Never seen that. Show me that later.
That's what we want for our podcast. This podcast is free for, you know.
So anyway, support the show. But if if all good, if your money is strapped, we totally understand. Head on over to YouTube, subscribe.
Yes.
And we're also on Spotify, but I'm not a big fan of Spotify. So I would recommend just ditching Spotify, but listen on YouTube.
Patreon,
YouTube. And as Danny always says, if you have thoughts that you want us to hear,
please let us know down below. Thanks, guys. We can't wait to see you next week.
Thanks.